All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Good afternoon, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I have the privilege and honor of talking to you today about veterans, everything veteran. We've got a great program lined up. We're going to be talking about a new organization that is in the Detroit area that has to do with Major League Baseball, and we've got some news for you. And then in the second half of the program, we've got the former Undersecretary of the VA, who's going to be talking about the changes that have occurred at the VA over the last 5 years. If you'll remember, when we've been covering this story for 12 years now already, is that the backup at the VA was up to over 600,000 veterans trying to get benefits and so on and so forth. And because of our guest, I think a lot has to do with our guest. And this is retired Brigadier General Allison Hickey, kind of streamlined the VA and finally brought in some magic technology. So you got to stay tuned for that. That's an interview that I did with Jim Falzone and General last week. So that's pretty exciting stuff. So we're very excited to talk about that with you and all the other things that are going on. We've got some events that are happening in the local area, and we've got just many, many things to talk about with you. So I'm anxious for that. If you wanted to get in on the conversation, you can always give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. We are coming to you from the studios of WAAM. Talk Radio 1600 AM in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. The sun is out. The snow is melting again. And so we're going to be talking right now with the baseball season coming up. And one of our favorite players is Justin Verlander. No, Justin couldn't make it. He's got to play baseball starting this week. But he did start an organization called Wins for Warriors Foundation. And joining me right now on the line is the CEO and big cheese over there at the Wins for Warriors, and that is Sandy Hudson. Sandy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. It's glad to be with you.
I'm very happy to have you with us as well. You know, here in the Detroit area, you know, hope springs eternal, as we always say, for all of our sports teams, and we're hoping again that this year the Tigers will be finally get to the World Series and win this one for us. We've been very patient.
They've got a real shot this year, and from Justin's perspective, the team is complete in terms of pitching and hitting, and so I really look forward to the season as well.
I do, too. I think it's going to be very exciting, but almost exciting as Justin Verlander's Wins for Warriors Foundation. Can you tell our audience about that, please?
Sure can. Justin launched this initiative about 2.5 years ago. He wanted to give back, and he has two grandfathers that were veterans and did service, and he wanted to do something, but he just didn't want to do something just for veterans. So what he did is he really focused his efforts around the hidden killer of PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So when he launched it with a commitment 2 years ago with $1 million, he really focused some giving around some top-notch national organizations such as Given Hour. The mission continues. Even some of our grant dollars went to Ann Arbor, to the University of Michigan's Depression Center, where they have a MSPAN program that supports veterans and the families on weekend retreats, all in the effort to help to diminish the effects of transition back into civilian life and the effects of PTSD and traumatic brain injury. It wasn't until about last year when we launched an event called the 9K, which was a road race, that he realized that it really wanted to raise some serious money from his efforts, as well as others that wanted to be a part of it. And so that's when he decided to form a foundation, that a public charity 501c3 that could certainly allow for him to continue his efforts, but get others engaged as well, including other celebrity athletes. So he is really set out to make a difference with not only the issues of mental health in veterans, but also as the foundation's mission states, to really advocate for and invest in resources that enable veterans and their families to live resilient lives. And so it's very positive. It's very, leveraging all of the great things that veterans have going for them, but also to help to make those great things better.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's a great organization, and we've talked with people from Given Hour here in the local area or in the state of Michigan, and it looks like it's probably the similar thing around the country where they donate time. These are psychiatrists and psychologists who donate an hour a week to talk with veterans and to help them through their, I guess, their recovery, hopefully, from their post-traumatic stress or their traumatic brain injuries, and many of the other things. And, in fact, we just a couple of months ago, I had a chance to meet Justin up at the Ann Arbor VA hospital where they donated a new waiting area up in the, I think it was the physical rehabilitation wing.
Yep. Yep.
And that was cool because it's got all kinds of baseball pictures and memorabilia and so on up there. And he just seems like a genuinely nice man.
He's a very nice man. He's a very caring man, and he's a very smart man. And he wants his investments to go a long way. It's not just about giving away dollars. And so the creation of the foundation and the kind of things that we're doing with veterans and their families is really across the board. Trying to not only get after the clinical side, as you mentioned, with Given Hour, the mission continues with their programs, but also doing things like the 1,000 Christmas Salutes, which is a dinner that we hosted last December for 1,000 veterans and their families in a top-notch facility called the Grosse Pointe War Memorial, and we served a fabulous dinner and actually even gave away 3 all-expense-paid trips to Disney World to 3 deserving veterans' families that couldn't go on their own. So, you know, it's really we look expansively about what we can do for families as well as the veterans themselves, and we're committed to getting the public involved in the effort. We have a new program launching on our WinsForWarriors.org website, and it's going to be where Tiger fans can play along with Justin and basically pledge dollars to help veterans. And the better that Justin does, the more that folks get to see their pledge dollars go to work for veterans. So that's going to be exciting.
I like that. How's that one going to work? Because the season begins in 2 days.
It's going to be up and running for the first start on Tuesday. And basically, it's called Pledge It. And you basically are pledging for every strikeout that Justin has, you're able to donate a certain dollar amount, and that continues throughout the season. So it adds a dynamic that as our name says, you're able to win for Warriors as Justin is, and hopefully the Tigers are. But we wanted to get fans involved as well.
I think that's a great idea. If you figure that if 1,000 people donated a dollar a strikeout, and if Justin is back to his normal ratio there, that could generate a lot of money.
That's how we feel about it, Dale, and we really we wanted to make sure that we were not just getting those that might be able to give bigger gifts involved, but we really wanted to get everybody involved. I have so many people that come up to us almost on a daily basis and said, this is great that Justin's doing this, how do I get involved?
Mm-hmm.
And so we revamped the website, made it much more user-friendly, and allowed for folks to really understand the issues, because that's important, but also then to have many call to actions that allow for them to donate, to advocate, and to volunteer if that's their thing. So we wanted to have many call to actions that allow for folks to engage.
Well, it certainly is something that we here at Veterans Radio are very excited about, and we'd like to talk to you off the air more to see how we can help promote the Wins for Warriors Foundation. The other thing I know, and I've been aware of this for quite a while, is that every time that Justin Verlander pitched a game at home, he would invite veterans into a private suite there.
Yes, it's a program that we've been very proud about. It's in partnership with the Detroit Tigers Foundation. It's called Verlander's Victory for Veterans. And every Saturday, home game, it's every Saturday home game. We invite through our relationship with the VA It turns out to be about 13 home games, but we invite veterans and their families to join together up in Judson's Suite. So you'll see more of that this upcoming season, and we're proud of that program. And really, it's the Detroit Tigers Foundation that does a lot of the heavy lifting for that. So we're going to be doing a lot more around Tiger games this year, and we're going to keep our eye out for a game in late August, where we're going to be inviting all sorts of veterans to a special game at the end of August. So lots to come on that whole front, because we really want to tie in with not only the veteran community but also the fan community and see what great things we can do for them.
Well, it's always very exciting to go to a Tigers game when they have a veteran who takes the ball out to the mound before the game begins. And everybody gets to their feet, and you can actually see tears in their eyes. It's very emotional. People in Detroit, very blue-collar type of people, very supportive of their military, and this is something that can – I think they're going to grab on to this, Sandy, and just really help you guys raise a lot of funds for what you want to do. And we certainly appreciate what you are doing and what Justin is doing to get this whole thing started. I when I was talking to you earlier in the week, I wanted to know if are there other organizations like this with other major league teams? Because we broadcast across the world, but I was wondering if there were other organizations that people might be interested in for their team.
There certainly is. I mean, many sports teams support veterans in various ways. One that's similar to what we're doing is a program that the Boston Red Sox have. And a couple of their players have been involved with, and it's a program called Home Base.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a program that raises money for a freestanding facility that specifically treats veterans with PTSD in a clinical setting. And it's a partnership with Mass General, whereby the veteran pays nothing. It's outside of the VA system, but it allows for the access that the veteran needs. And that program is now expanding into some other markets to create some new facilities, and we're taking a look at it right now to see if that's something that Detroit might want to move in that direction with, and explore some partnerships with some health systems. So there are some exciting programs out there that are doing great work, and we at the foundation certainly are active in our research and trying to hook up and connect with as many programs as possible.
Well, it's a great idea. We're talking with Sandy Hudson. He's the CEO and executive director of the Wins for Warriors. And, Sandy, if somebody wants to get involved with the Wins for Warriors in Detroit, how do they do that?
The best way to do it is go to the website. It's wins, W-I-N-S, for F-O-R, warriors.org.
Okay, that's winsforwarriors.org. Support Justin Verlander and his foundation here, and, of course, support the Tigers. And we'll all be happy to do that, and hope to see you down at the ballpark sometime. Thank you very much, Sandy.
Thank you, Dale.
All righty. There you go, folks. See, I am just constantly amazed at what civilian organizations are doing to help veterans. You know, we're going to be talking about this a little bit later in the program, but, you know, we always seem to feel that the VA is the one that has to do all of these things. And we know that the VA just gets overwhelmed sometimes with just the pure number of veterans out there. There's still 22 million living veterans in America today, and we've got to take care of them. And, you know, if they all went to the VA, it's going to get a little crowded over there, because the people in Washington, for some reason, they don't seem like they want to do all these things, but nobody ever wants to pony up the money. And if they don't pony up the money, we've got to go outside at civilian organizations like the Wins for Warriors and some of the other organizations that we've talked to here on Veterans Radio. So we want to know if you have an organization out there that is helping veterans in any way possible, let us know. And we'll be glad to get you on the air and give you a little promotion, give you a little PR, a little advertising and so forth, because we know that this is the way. We always take care of our own here in America, and this is what we have to do. So pay attention to that. We've got some events coming up. We're going to take a break right now, and I'll come back and give you a list of upcoming events in the local area and around the world. So stay tuned. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that sound effect that we just played was kind of gives me a good lead into some of the things that are going on in the local area. And I don't know how many of you are aware of this, probably all of you in the local Ann Arbor area. We are very, very lucky to have an organization called the Yankee Air Museum. And the Yankee Air Museum is over in Ypsilanti, Willow Run, and it's at the former bomber plant from World War II. And they've done all kinds of things. But the main thing is they've got all these great static displays over there of airplanes and jet planes and B-52s and helicopters and simulators and uniforms and libraries and all kinds of things. And I just wanted to let you know about a couple of events that are coming up with them. We've been involved with the Yankee Air Museum since we went on the air in November of 2003, and it's always a pleasure to give them a little boost here. So number one is they have periodically they have these presentations that they give where somebody will come in and give a lecture on some sort of historical event or plane or something along those lines. And coming up on this Wednesday, April 6th, at 7:30 p.m., there's a free presentation night, and this one is talking about saving the Willow Run bomber plant. And in 1942, the largest factory in the world, I want you to know, was built in Washtenaw County, Michigan, and they called it the Willow Run bomber plant. And this is where they built airplanes for World War II. And they were turning out 8,000, bombers and mostly bombers and B-24s and B-25s and so forth. And I know that I'll be corrected if I don't get the names of planes right because I never seem to remember what plane is which one. But so anyway, so they've got that coming up. And then they've got another event that's coming up next weekend that's at the April 9th. And that is from 10 until 2 o'clock. And this is what they call their annual bomber buffing. And what you do is you go over there and you get to mingle with all these great people in the local area who just love flying and love World War II aircraft, and you're going to clean up the airplanes, and you get to buff them. And they end up looking just like they did in the 1940s during World War II. And they've got a B-17 that they'll be cleaning up, and let me give you a little bit of history here on that. It says this polishing party is especially meaningful because in 2016 is the 30th anniversary of the Yankee Air Museum's purchase of the B-17. The Yankee Lady is only one of 10 B-17s still flying and one of only five on which people can take a ride. That's right, folks. You can go over to the Yankee Air Museum, go to their website, and you can sign up to take a ride on a B-17. How cool would that be? Some of you out there, your grandfathers, and maybe even your grandmothers, probably flew some B-17s. And you can take a ride in that. My partner Bob Gould did that. I have not done that yet. I'm anxious to try it at some point. But you can do that. So if you don't want to go to the presentation on Wednesday, you can go over to the Yankee Air Museum on Saturday the 9th from 10 to 2, buff up these airplanes, and perhaps you can work your way into a ride on one of them. I think it'd be kind of cool, really. And let's see, the other event, another big fundraiser. These guys are always trying to raise money. These things are not cheap to run. I mean, you're talking about a couple of $1,000s an hour just to keep them in the air. So if you want to find out more about what's happening over there, you go to yankeeairmuseum.org. And you can find all kinds of information about how to get tickets if you want to get a fly. One of the things that they've got that I just got in a message this week was corporate. How'd you like to take your corporate team out for a team-building experience, and in the meantime, you get to ride on a B-17 or a B-25? I think that's pretty exciting stuff. You know, they take you out to these fancy resorts and stuff to do these, but you could just go down the road here, and instead of going swimming in a swimming pool, you actually get to go for a ride in a B-17, the Yankee Lady, or the B-25, the Yankee Warrior. It's a 30-minute flight. You need to give the Yankee Air Museum a call. His name is Dave Wright, and give Dave a call at 734-483-4030, and that's 734-483-4030, and ask for extension 236, and he'll set you right up. The other thing that's going on, finally, and this is how many of you like to swing dance out there? I know I do. I'm such a great dancer anyways. Nina's over there going, yeah, right. which this is what we try to do. But there's a 1940s USO dinner and dance coming up at the Yankee Air Museum called American Bistro Night. And this is going to be on Saturday, April 30th, 2016. The doors open at 5:30. Dinner's at 6:30. It's going to be in Hangar 1. Tickets are $40 in advance. For members, $45. For non-members, $50 at the door. It's available at the Yankee Air Museum. You can give them a call at 734-483-4030 or go online at yankeeairmuseum.org. Again, the Bistro Night, American Bistro Night, a 1940s USO dinner and dance. Music is going to be provided by the Couriers, Swing Dancing, and the Ladies for Liberty. Sounds like the Andrews Sisters have come back to entertain you on that night. So put it on your calendar right now, Saturday, April 30th. And that's at the Yankee Air Museum. And again, all kinds of things over there. So go to their website. You'll be able to find out how much it would cost you if you want to take a ride on a B-17 or a B-25. And I think you're going to really enjoy that. Whew. All right. I got about 4 minutes here. I had some more stuff to give you information on. The second half of the program, as I mentioned, is a pre-recorded program that my partner and I, Jim Falzone, did with retired Brigadier General Allison Hickey. And Allison was the Undersecretary for Benefits at the VA from 2011 up until last October, I believe it was. And her job, which she'll tell you, but her job was to modernize the system. Remember all the news we've been reading over the last couple of years about 600,000 veterans and constantly waiting for appointments and so on and so forth. So she's going to give you the down and dirty on what was going on at the VA. And one of the things was that their archaic system of keeping records. Everything was on paper. They didn't utilize the computers enough. They didn't have computer systems that could talk to each other. Sounds like the government in general. And she was given a short amount of time to do this. And I want you to imagine that you're on like an aircraft carrier and that you are supposed to make a 90-degree turn in about a minute. And if you've ever seen the size of an aircraft carrier, you can't turn that thing in a day sometimes. And so this was her mission, was to modernize the VA benefit system. And she'll tell you what was involved with that. It is pre-recorded. Jim sounds a little bit like he's in a tunnel. We worked on that. I think I got it pretty much fixed up. And about 10 minutes into this interview, there's a little breakup on her phone. But otherwise, I think this is a really, really important interview for you to listen to. So make sure that you stay tuned after the news to listen to this interview with Brigadier General Allison Hickey. And she was one of the first female graduates of the United States Air Force Academy. She was a pilot, which to me is always cool. And so we talked about that a little bit before, and you'll be able to find out more about her interview if you go to our website, click on our podcast. We have a whole other half-hour interview that we did with her about her military career. But the reason that we wanted to talk about this issue was that the VA is continually trying to upgrade their systems. And what we need you to do, this is all of our listeners, is we need you to contact your senators and your congressmen and tell them to just do something. They all keep saying, well, we're going to help the veterans. We've got to do this for the veterans. We're going to do that for veterans. And then suddenly it gets lost in a committee somewhere, and we never hear anything about it. So I want you to contact your congressman or congresswoman and let them know that you're getting tired of all of this waiting around. You can't wait for another president to come in to give money to the VA system itself. You can't wait for things to change because right now the Vietnam-era veterans are going into their 70s and are going to be utilizing the VA system more and more and more and more. You've got these veterans today that during World War II, they wouldn't have even survived. And today they are surviving, but they have so many different issues, not only mental, but so many physical. I mean, we've got double, triple, quadruple amputees that are alive today that wouldn't be alive 60 years ago. And we have to make sure that we take care of them for the rest of their lives. This is the deal that you made. If you want people to be in the military, you got to agree to take care of them. Otherwise, you're not going to get any people in the military. So I just want to remind you that. I'm not going to come back and reintroduce the interview after the news at the bottom of the hour. So I want to make sure that you stay tuned for Jim Falzone, me, and Brigadier General Allison Hickey, right here on Veterans Radio, and we will be back after the news.
Our guest today is the former Undersecretary for Benefits for the Department of Veterans Affairs, Allison Hickey. Allison, say hello to the Veterans Radio listening audience.
Hello, and it's great to be talking with you all today.
Well, we're glad to have you, and my partner Dale Thronberry is in the council room with me. Dale, say hello to everyone.
Hi, good afternoon, General.
Hi, Dale. How are you doing?
I am terrific, and we're anxious to learn. We've already learned about your military background, and you know, just to review kind of for our audience, is that she's a graduate of the Air Force Academy, a pilot, which is always cool, did a lot of great things with the Air Force, was in for 27 years, and retired in November of 2007 and offered this position, I'm guessing, as Undersecretary for Benefits of the Department of Veterans Affairs on 6-6-11, D-Day for Allison.
And I'm claiming the victory forward.
There you go.
So, Allison, let's start with this. Our veterans who are listening to Veterans Radio may be very aware of what the Undersecretary for Benefits is involved in, but I suspect most people in the general public don't know what an undersecretary is and don't know what an Undersecretary for Benefits is at the VA. Maybe you can give us a little background.
Yes, so there are, in VA, there are three major areas that respond directly to the cabinet secretary and then to the president on all the issues of veterans. One of them is the health side. The person that leads all the medical side or health side is the undersecretary for health. Then there is the undersecretary for benefit who leads about eight different programs, many of which some of your readers may have leveraged, whether it's a disability claim, a pension, a going to school on the GI Bill, a VA home loan program, a voc rehab, an employment kind of program, an insurance, so all the service group life insurance for our military members, and then veteran group life insurance and others for our veterans after they separate or retire. And then finally, while I was there, I stood up the transition portion of VBA or the Veterans Benefits Administration as well. And then the last administration is Memorial Affairs that handles all of the memorials, all the cemeteries that are that VA has responsibility for and works in that space.
Well, and listeners, we're going to refer to the general with her permission as Allison during this podcast and interview.
Please do. I've actually asked everyone to do that even while I was in VA, so I appreciate your doing that.
Allison, give us some sense of how big this benefits portion of VA is in terms of either budget or people. Sort of, it's amazing to me how big it is, and I think a lot of folks don't understand that, and it later on leads to why there are some complexities.
Yes, so if there are 22 million veterans alive today, the Veterans Benefit Administration, between the veterans and the actual service members that they support as well in VA home loans or GI bills, because they do that as well for currently serving members, it's a 12 million population. A budget of when I left, the budget was $95 billion, of which all but $3 billion of that goes directly into the hands of veterans, their family members, and survivors. So it's not $95 billion for VA, it's $95 billion, or $93.2 billion for veterans, their families, and survivors. So basically it means there is enough staff in this world for 3 cents on the dollar it takes to distribute $92 billion to veterans every year. The size of the organization was about 21,000 employees, of which about 10,000 are doing what people are most familiar with, at least it seems, but those are disability compensation claims. And then another couple thousand are doing the education claims, the GI Bill claims,
And then it spreads out over the other portfolios of benefits that are provided to veterans, including some 700 or 800 people answering phones every day for call-ins and things of that nature.
Well, and again, geographically, division or department that you were responsible for covered the entire country, a lot of physical presence.
So we had 56 regional offices. The one in Michigan is obviously in Detroit, but they also touch other parts of the state. We also, though, have an overseas presence. VA has one. There's a large office in Manila that handles a lot of the veterans who are stationed over there and overseas, and they also now help take surge work from stations who may be a little swamped. There are also VBA employees in all kinds of countries that are there for separating service members. And there's an awful lot of veterans who live overseas. And so these people support, the questions they might have, the filing concerns, the help they might need from those kind of forward deployed locations. There's also a footprint in Puerto Rico, and they serve the Virgin Islands and some of the other Caribbean areas as well.
When you first came to the job in June of 2011, what was the status of the benefits group that you were taking over, did you feel?
So first, I will tell you, as everybody probably well remembers, in 2011, they had just started responding to the new three presumptive conditions for our Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange. And that put 260,000 new claims overnight in their inventory in October of 2010, just before I arrived. And so they were trying to work through those and sort through those and get staff trained on how to do them and get them stood up and try to move forward to start tackling those, which they were required by law to do first. And so by the time I got there, the backlog of claims, which are any claims older than 125 days, had grown to nearly 550,000 claims. They were doing them all by hand in paper with little rubber fingertips on their hands, looking at claims files that could be, upwards of 2 feet tall, not unlike, looking at a little toddler, and memorizing 850 diagnostic codes in their heads. And it was just, when you looked at it, just not an efficient, not an effective process that a lot of really hardworking people were trying to do to their very best, and about 52% of them were veterans themselves, kind of frustrated with the tools they had on hand. And they were falling further and further and further behind. And they didn't like it. Veterans didn't like it. And everybody deserved a better answer. There wasn't a technology system. There wasn't a way to file claims online. There weren't standard forms. There weren't rules-based calculators. There was no enabling capability in the technology realm. They weren't organized to do the work in lanes with the work segmented at all. So everything went through one filter. Whether you were the best employee, the longest, most mature employee, you really knew the work, or whether you were brand new in the door, you had the equal opportunity to pull some of the hardest cases. And it just wasn't very well organized under the people, process, or technology realm, and that's what we set out to do, was to create an integrated plan, deliver that plan in 45 days, and execute it on the next 3 years to get that backlog down 90% from where it peaked in 2013 at 611,000 claims, and today it hovers between 70,000 and 80,000 claims, and some of those have very good reasons for not getting done in 125 days, which wouldn't help a veteran if they did them fast.
Well, one of the things that, as somebody who's been a practitioner in this area during that period of time, we've seen tremendous progress been made over those last 3 or 4 years. And it was, I think, surprising to everybody when they found that it was all paper. When I tell a veteran, it's all paper, it'll take them so many days to get it from the mail room to the file room. How did you drive change in an organization that big, which in 2011 didn't have the information technology systems and other things that you would have expected in a business or corporation of similar size.
So I had not only had that experience in the Air Force where I had to do fundamentally change, you know, a big portfolio, part of the Air Force portfolio where nobody really wanted to change, but we had to. We had a bias for action that said we had to. I then went over to industry for 3 years where I learned about some fundamental things that added to my understanding of how to make those kinds of large transformations and change management. And so when I arrived, in VA, one, I had a mandate from the Senate SFAC chair to deliver a plan in 45 days. And so what we did was what I know that works, and it works in industry, which is we pulled all the key stakeholders together. People were a little surprised. We had not only VBA people, but we had field people and headquarters people, and we had VSOs, and we had lawyers, and we had union reps, and we had, you know, people with just industry people that had great ideas, and we just pulled them all together, locked ourselves in a room for 3 or 4 days, and went through, siphoned through an entire list of about 600 different good ideas that had been submitted through an innovation effort, and culled those down to about 45 of what we thought to be the most promising, and integrated them into whether or not they would be a people initiative, something that would change the way we're organized or trained to do the work, a process initiative, something that could be leaned up or re-engineered or had already started that process, improved some metal, and what technology would need to do to enable all of that. And we literally put that on paper, put all those initiatives into those categories, integrated it, and then I asked every one of the regional offices to identify a change management agent, a new position we stood up, who was a very well-respected, a little more junior in the organization, but employees could approach, VSOs could approach, anybody could approach, and they became part of the impetus to help us move through not just the structure of change, but the culture of change. And I think,
well, I think, General, there's a good example, again, of one of those pearls of wisdom you're giving us that I want to make sure our listeners focus on. It takes a culture of change. You can't just say, do it, and here's the process. You've got to change that whole culture of people buying in. And were there special steps or activities that you undertook to make sure folks throughout the 56 regional offices were buying into the cultural change?
Yeah, so one of the things that I believe that every senior leader needs to do, and I personally did this, is when you're going to do that kind of a large change, you've got to get in it up to your, I say, armpits. And I really did that. So in the first week or two I was there, I asked for the all-employee email list, and there was a little nervousness about giving me that. Well, they might respond to you if you send something, and I commented that's kind of the point. And so I started sending personal emails from me. Nobody wrote them for me. I wrote them. If they responded back, I responded. If it got to a veteran, which it typically did, I responded. And I just got involved in a very open communication strategy because I felt like if you don't let people voice their concerns to you and you don't listen and respond, then they don't keep talking to you, and you're going to walk off a cliff when you're trying to lead that large of a change.
Part of this was demonstrating that leadership cared and wanted to change.
Yes, and what I found, too, I went out and immediately went to 12 different regional offices, and instead of going and letting, you know, a leadership person give me a briefing sitting in a room, you know, with, you know, nice chairs and everything, I said, nope, we're not doing that. You're going to walk me around through the regional office, and I'm going to start wherever the veteran stuff starts. So if it comes in the mail room, I want to have the full experience of that veteran's, you know, information and communication to us from the get-go, and then how that claim is handled at every step of the way, and I want you to make me a claim and take me through the process. I only had to do that about 3 different regional offices before it became really clear to me where things were broken. And you know who knew it all along were the actual employees. They just didn't have before sort of the focused effort They didn't have the resources to make the change, and they just needed someone to say, okay, here we go, and be just absolutely dogged persistent on making that transformation happen and improving the way they could do the work, which they really wanted to change. They just needed someone to help get them there. And then all for the betterment of the veteran themselves. So when I arrived, veterans were waiting, as you well know, and many of your readership knows, more than 300 some odd days for their initial claim decision. And today it's down to something like, you know, 70 to 90 days they're waiting. In some cases it's really light depending on how many issues are in the claim. But, you know, substantial numbers of days taken off that wait.
So one of the things, General, you mentioned, I'm sorry, Allison, you mentioned were that you reached out to all the employees. Dale's reading, I think, one of the things you're referring to.
Yeah, it's where your average claim went down. I can't believe these numbers. My claim took almost a year and a half. We now complete 99% of the claims in less than 92 days is your average.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So the way we did that was we increased the productivity of our employees by 81%. You know, when you give them a better way to organize around the effort, so we segmented all the work so the really fast claims could go down the express lane. No, not like, unlike when you go to the grocery store. If you only have one or two items, you don't want to wait behind the person's got a cartload full.
Right.
And so we did that. We segmented the work according to lanes, which is what industry does, too. So we adopted an industry model. Then we also completely changed our training program. Our poor employees, in many cases, were showing up, basically sitting next to someone well-intentioned and learning how to do claims by looking over the shoulder. And you just can't do that. Military people know one of the best things about our military in this country is how well we train people to do this mission. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing that in VBA. We fundamentally overhauled the complete training program and now mandated a complete long training program before you ever even got involved in really touching veteran claims and really got people up to speed faster with a much higher level of quality. And then we built the technology like crazy with things in it, that job aids in it, that help people to make better decisions. They never had that before, and it wasn't fair for them. You know, people weren't happy with what we were doing in VA in those days before all this. But it wasn't the employees' fault. It was the lack of good people, process, and technology capability that just didn't exist and now does.
Well, I was just reading your final love note to all the employees of the VA, and in one of your comments was that I thought was very appropriate was, you know, most of these people aren't going to file a claim willy-nilly. And so you put down, remember, integrity, quality, grant if you can, deny only if you must.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very interesting because the reputation of the VA among veterans up until the last couple of years has been deny, deny, deny.
Until
you die, and then they'll have to worry about your claim because you don't qualify by then. And that was one of the problems that was going on, and that's the perception that you have obviously had a great deal to do with changing that perception. And now we just have to continue that on with the people that replaced you.
Yeah, so I think we got a pretty good culture of I'm not sure that everybody in the organization felt like they had the permission to do that. Somewhere way back when, there were, you know, processes, I think even prior to the 2000 time frames, where there was a lot of, that was the sort of model operation. And so, I said to them, no, you know, you do what you can to say yes. And believe it or not, our employees really do want to come to work every day and, if possible, say yes. And giving them permission to do that, I told them to put a little sticky note on their computer that had those three things on it to remind them that, you know, that's the way we approach this environment. We figure out how to say yes unless we absolutely can't. And so the grant, but by the way, I will tell you there's a little bit of some misunderstanding in that, because even prior to my arriving there, the grant rate was hovering around 65 to 70%, and that's where it still is, in the 65 to 70% range. But the, for those who don't, aren't granted, I fully understand that sometimes that feels, you know, it's not even about, you know, the resources or anything else. It's just about somebody acknowledging something that you're dealing with, whether that's a visible wound of war or a physical, or, you know, or an invisible wound of war. You really, this process for some reason really helps them to feel validated in what they deal with every day.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we hear from the veterans. They just want somebody at the VA to hear the whole story and give a reasoned approach, which they can accept or not, but they want to feel like they were heard.
Yeah.
In our final 5 minutes, I'd like to cover three topics. I know that in the 4.5 years you were the Undersecretary of Benefits at the VA, you were in the hot seat. And I want you to talk to us a little bit about that hot seat. I also want to hear your view on certified case managers, and finally talking a little bit more about successful transformation and change. But let's start with the hot seat.
So I fully expected to arrive, and sit directly in the hot seat and stay there for all 4.5 years. But I would say when you're leading that kind of a change and the process has been so broken that, you know, people had some, you know, some concerns that it should, you know, that you got to do something fast. Well, for change, by the way, this magnitude of change, I don't know anybody in federal government or even the civilian work industry that has made such huge change with such major positive outcomes. I've just never run across it. You just don't bring on 6 enterprise IT systems that are all customer facing, that all enable you to do better across all 8 areas that you have responsibility for that meet the needs of a veteran or family member or survivor in a 3.5 year period of time. It's just unheard of. But still, you know, people are in pain and there's these feelings that you got to go faster, faster, faster. Well, sometimes faster, too fast can be also the undoing of do it well. And so,
you can spend too much time talking to the critics,
yes,
or those who are taking resources away from what needs to be done. You don't have to say anything nasty about Congress, but I do wonder sometimes whether or not all those committee meetings actually move the ball forward, or just take resources from the top away from what they should be doing.
So I would say that they have an oversight responsibility, but I do think sometimes it would have been better to let us do that great change without taking quite so much fire from the tree line. Because it did, you know, we were ending up writing, you know, lots of responses that we could have instead have been moving another new initiative forward. And I think that there's a balancing that has to be done around the oversight and the work that people are trying to do to make things better. And so I would encourage good collaboration in those environments to watch the balance there. And I know I'm sounding very political right now, but I am.
that's okay. That's the world in which you live.
Yes.
I don't, and so I get to be a little more blunt. Let me move you to the concept of certified case managers. You and I had some exchange on this, and I think it's really important to get your views out.
Yeah. So one of the things I have, you know, seen a growing requirement of in industry since I've been out, and even while I was in, it's this idea that patients, and I'll use the word patients, though it will convert, you'll see in a second, over to veterans, that, you know, human beings, you know, have more than just their medical care requirements in life. You know, they have the complete physical, social, economic window of a view of their life. You're not going to get a patient or a veteran to pay attention to their diabetes plan when they don't have a job, their family doesn't have food on the table, they're worried about staying in their home, and all the rest of those non-medical side of things. So interestingly enough, we have in certain places in VA case managers around some of our most wounded, ill, and injured, where they are coordinating the efforts of sort of the physical medical response, the non-medical benefits response, and even the end-of-life palliative care and memorial affairs response. And I think, you know, growing that capacity, growing that capability so a veteran has a case manager to work with of some kind will take a lot of the confusion, the navigation issues, the who do I talk to, how do I talk to someone that knows and understands the integration of all these things, because this is my life. I'm not a medical person, and then I'm a benefits person, and then I'm a memorial affairs survivor. You know, I am all these things are part of my life, and I need somebody to help me navigate that in a broader way. Industry's moving this way towards certified case managers who not only have the responsibility to make sure all the cross-medical communities or issues are addressed, but they're also now calling on and looking for benefits for homelessness or for, you know, employment services or transportation needs or all those kind of things that we do by our DNA in VA. They actually look at us and go, man, you guys have actually got a good model for this. Why aren't we doing more of this in industry? And there's a growing discussion around that.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and it would also help VA on the whole customer service front, where I had somebody I could call and feel like they know me and they care about me and they'll navigate me through the system. So, you know, I think it's a great concept. I hope folks in Washington, D.C. are listening to you on this and we see it blossom a little bit.
But I do have one thing in closing if I can share with you, which is for all your women veterans out there or even your male veterans or your non-veterans who know of women who have served, please, please, please have them go register at the Women in Military Service Memorial. They can do it online. That's one of my new other advocacy perspectives is to get more women to come forward and other family members to bring women forward who haven't yet registered. So would also leave you with that thought and that passion as well.
And that was General Allison Hickey on Veterans Radio, Jim Calzone, and I interviewed her last week talking about some of the changes that have been occurring at the VA, especially the veterans benefits part of it. And I think it's important that you know about this, that the VA is doing everything that they can. As I mentioned earlier in the program, it's like trying to turn an aircraft carrier, you know, in a very small room. It doesn't work, and it takes a lot of time. People are very territorial, and so we want to make sure that we continue this process of updating the VA. You know, one of the things that we have been saying here at Veterans Radio since the very beginning is that we like to feel that we are an advocate for veterans' issues, and politics has no place in determining what is fair for American veterans. We just want our politicians to keep their promises. We encourage our listeners, all of you out there, civilian and military alike, to get involved in the political process and to make sure that our voices are heard. Because these people were some of the ones that Allison had to deal with. They started to cut her budget. You know, they want you to do these things, but then they don't want to pay for it. So get on the horn. Let these people know what's going on. Next week on Veterans Radio, we're going to have another great story for you. I want to make sure everybody knows also that my partner Bob Gould is doing well. He had some surgery this week. If you want to send him an email, send it to bob@veteransradio.net. Until next week, you are dismissed.